A lot of my spiritual practice involves finding ways to cultivate more connection. I don't want to go through life numb and disassociated, even if that means I sit with discomfort more regularly. I want to live meaningfully and as present to this wild miracle of consciousness as I can be. Part of why pagan spirituality works for me is its focus on aligning ourselves to the cycles of the natural world, listening more deeply to our inner guidance, and seeking to be an active co-creator with life rather than just riding along on the wave. Our prayer, meditation, and ceremony forms tend to emphasize presence and authentic connection. There are these amazing pivot points during the year where we can tap into a greater pattern and use that pattern to help us move forward. The changing of the calendar year, of course, is just numbers when you break it down. It can feel kind of arbitrary, and it's easy to write it off as simply a change of digits. But that completely ignores the larger pattern unfolding right now. As Reverend Carl said at the Christmas Eve service, in every new present moment, we have an opportunity for a little rebirth, a chance to nudge ourselves, others, and the world toward just a little or a lot more hope or love or peace or joy. And this moment, this changing of the calendar year, is a pivot point. It has been for many generations now. Rather than brushing off that entire wave of human feeling and effort, what if we became more present to it? The techniques around personal growth and transformation that are used in pagan practice do not require pagan beliefs in order to be effective. For example, releasing is an important piece of how we approach change. The way this works for pagans is to notice what's getting in the way, how we're contributing to that obstacle, and then to try to shift our own thoughts and behavior in order to create more space. I'm going to pose some questions to you. These come from the New Year's Day purification ritual that happened here on January 1st. Close your eyes for a moment, or just soften your gaze. And as I speak, simply notice what arises for you. What stone do you no longer need to carry? What weight can you return to the earth? What thoughts no longer serve you? What concerns can you release to the air? What habits or addictions restrict your growth? What patterns can you release to the fire? What emotions weigh you down? What wounds can you wash away in the water? You can gently open your eyes whenever you'd like to. For many of us, releasing is the first step in a larger behavior or perspective change. If the idea of taking on something new feels like too much right now, consider instead, what can you let go of? What stone can you set down? And what would help you do so? In the New Year's ceremony, after we consider our own answers to the questions I asked you, we do something to help us embody our releasing. We place a physical stone into a bowl or waft incense over ourselves, or we write down that pattern on a piece of paper and burn it. Think about what would help, whether that's a simple action you can perform at home, visiting a place that helps you feel centered, or bringing in some assistance in the form of family, friends, or professional guidance. Another thread of pagan practice that can be helpful is the idea of intentionality. Rather than New Year's resolutions, which have a tendency to go off the rails a bit, many of us set intentions. This can be a single word up to a short phrase. Setting an intention allows room for adaptability, revision, and changes. An intention allows us to move in a particular direction, even if the specific path there changes a bit. And I'll give you some of my own one-word intentions over the years as an example. Manifest. Nurture. Shine. Root. And my word for this year is choice. Intentions can be supported with yet other practices. One of my favorite ways to support an intention is to make sure I'm having my own message affirmed back to me regularly. So this can mean changing the background on your phone or your computer to a photo or image that reminds you of your intention. Vision boards or simply wall art that reference the intention can be a good addition as well. We are constantly receiving information from our environment, so consider adjusting the environment. Intentions can have colors, patterns, scents, sounds, and more associated with them. It's a lot easier to hold an intention when our environment supports it. Another technique I love is affirmations. Now, affirmations can get a lot of flack for being ridiculous, but I would posit that that really only happens when we're talking about poorly constructed affirmations. Affirmations work by giving us an addition to our internal narrative. Our self-talk matters. A well-constructed affirmation uses I am phrasing. For example, I am grateful for my strength and resilience. Or, I am honoring my healing process. Consider creating an affirmation for this new year. My single word intention this year is choice, so my affirmation this year is I am choosing my path mindfully and prioritizing my needs. Affirmations can be written in dry erase marker on mirrors and other surfaces, turned into decorations, added into your meditative practice, and more. And one other support that I absolutely love is building playlists for my intention. Music is the most incredible bridge between the conscious and subconscious mind. Think about how you felt when Nick started playing Here Comes the Sun, right? It's powerful. So, think about what songs resonate with the intention you're setting on the overall direction you would like to go. One of my intentions over the years was courage, and I still listen to that playlist when I need to be brave. As you contemplate another calendar year, remember, there are tools for transformation. Releasing, intention setting, affirmation, and environmental support. We have an opportunity here to begin again, to choose a different direction, to let go of something heavy, to set the first block in building a bigger dream.
In ancient Roman mythology, the month of January is named after the god Janus. He's the god not only of beginnings and endings, but also of liminal spaces, the gates, the transitions, the passages that are often betwixt and between the ending of one chapter of our life and another beginning. As a visual manifestation of this duality, Janus is said to have two faces, each looking in the opposite direction of the other. He's the perfect namesake for the first month of the year, and also really hard to sneak up on, right? So he's the perfect namesake for this first month of the year when we feel this natural inclination to look both backward at the year that has just ended and forward at the year that is just beginning. At the beginning of this new year of 2024, anyone weirded out that it's 2024? So in the spirit of Janus's two faces, I'd like to invite us to reflect on a recently published book titled Build the Life You Want, The Art and Science of Getting Happier. It's by Arthur C. Brooks and a very little known co-author named Oprah Winfrey. Some of you recall back in 2022, I preached a sermon on Brooks's previous book titled From Strength to Strength, Finding Success, Happiness, and Deep Purpose in the Second Half of Life. I liked that book so much. I read a lot of books, but I liked this book so much that it made my top 10 best books I read in 2022 list. But I wasn't alone. Oprah liked it so much that she called Brooks and suggested they co-write a book together. And what do you say when Oprah asks you to do something? You say yes. Yes is the answer. Yes, Oprah. I will come to your house and co-write a book with you. Right? You know, known as the queen of all media, Oprah remains one of the most influential people in the world and has a long-standing interest in self-improvement practices. Arthur C. Brooks is a professor at Harvard Business School where he teaches courses on happiness. And together, they really are quite the formidable team. I'll share just a few highlights with you, but the book itself is quite short and accessible if this sermon leaves you curious to learn more. If you're feeling like, I don't even have time to read a short book or listen to it on audiobook in this new year, if that's the case for you, you can also go to arthurbrooks.com/build, and there are quite a few free articles, and you kind of pick the topic you're most interested in and just read a few of those. As background to why this topic is important, it's notable that in the past decade in the United States, the percentage of people saying they are not too happy rose from 10% to 24%. And the percentage of people living with depression is increasing dramatically, especially among young adults. Meanwhile, the percentage of people saying they're very happy has fallen from 36% to 19%. Both of these trends are, of course, going in the opposite direction of what we might hope, and experts disagree about the causes. That's a separate sermon. You know, is it social media? Is it iPhones? Is it, you know, what is it? But these patterns are also being seen globally. So where do we go from here? Well, one key insight from the academic study of happiness is that it is typically impossible to reach some permanent state of never-ending happiness. So the bad news is you can't be happy. You can't be happy in some simplistic, unchanging way, but you can be happier. It turns out that happiness is really more of a direction than a destination. And that means no matter our circumstances, there are strategies for sort of turning back in the direction of happiness and becoming at least incrementally happier, and then happier still. This realization reminds me of a motto from the meditation teacher Dan Harris, who says that his initial hope in learning to meditate, because he was really quite skeptical about it at first, he said, you know, I'm not really trying to achieve some kind of permanent bliss state. It would actually be worth it to me if I could become 10% happier. I think that's pretty good. You know, if a new practice makes you 10% happier, it's not bad. And if meditation isn't your thing, there are related dynamics with many other practices, from making art to exercise to even just spending more time outside than you typically do. And if you continue on that journey, whatever it is, kind of going deeper and getting better at it, your happiness can snowball positively sort of from new plateaus. You can get 10% happier of this total and then 10% happier of that new larger total and then 10% of that new, you know, total there. To be clear, though, none of this means that all our problems go away or that negative emotions are eliminated, although we may find we have an increased capacity to relate differently to those problems and to those negative emotions. I also should be clear, I don't actually think it's a good life goal to eliminate negative emotions. Negative emotions are really good signals of like problems and things that need to be changed and warning signs to us. So the point is not toxic positivity, but the realization that it's often possible to be happier than you might have been otherwise in any given context. So what does that mean specifically? So studies have shown that happiness tends to have three major ingredients. So if you want to cook up some happiness in the new year, it tends to be enjoyment, satisfaction, and purpose. First, I'll say more about each. Enjoyment, here social scientists mean more than just pleasure. Not that there's anything wrong with pleasure. But pleasure alone tends to engage just our brainstem, the more kind of basic reptilian parts of ourselves, which makes them fleeting and more solitary. Enjoyment in the technical sense that's meant here is not only about pleasure, but about some kind of conscious connection to other people, to the world, to just something larger than just yourself. And that engages the more evolved prefrontal cortex of our brain and makes it more lasting. So think about the difference between simply eating food, that is by all means a good and pleasurable thing to do, versus enjoying a meal with loved ones that creates a warm memory. That's kind of the difference that we're talking about. That slightly more involved practice requiring a little more time and effort that really helps nudge you in the direction of being at least happier. Satisfaction, that second major ingredient of happiness, is similar in that it requires an investment of time and effort. Satisfaction, again, in the sense meant here, it's the thrill of accomplishing something that you've worked for, usually worked hard for. The feeling of satisfaction, however, can be fleeting, and it has more staying power when it's connected to that third ingredient of purpose. We humans have the capacity to forego enjoyment and satisfaction for a while. We can, you know, delay gratification, as it were. And what helps most help us do that is if, and get through the hard times, is if there's some kind of why, some kind of meaning and purpose that we're working toward. And the beginning of a new year is a prime time to reflect on where is it that you find the most meaning and purpose in your life. So far, these insights I know have been a bit abstract, so let's get more concrete about some of the practices that can help you find that intersection of enjoyment and satisfaction and purpose, and that can help you move at least incrementally in the direction of being happier, and then yet happier still. I'm only going to give you three examples. There are many, many more in the book, if this kind of whets your appetite. Even with these three, just listen if one particularly intrigues you and consider kind of experimenting with that, maybe in the spirit of what Irene said, you know, put something, you know, put on your mirror or on your phone that's going to remind you to kind of do this thing that you're intending to do more. And you can potentially add others as you have time and energy. I'll also say, if possible, if you're going to be adding one or two or more new things in your life, you might want to drop some practices as well. The secret to getting incrementally happier is not always addition. Sometimes it is subtraction. It is just doing less. So with no further ado, let's get into it. These are three among many possible practices for becoming incrementally happier. You can even try these kind of silently right now, related to things that may be happening in your life that spring to mind. The first one, and some of you have heard me talk about this before, but I chose it because I think the particular formulation I'm going to give you is actually better than the one that Oprah and Brooks write. They write about this, but I think this particular way of doing it is even more effective than how they write about it. So try sometimes, instead of saying I am, try saying there is blank. From I am to there is. This mindfulness practice was created by the meditation teacher Kenneth Folk. And it seems simple, but I've found it can produce tremendous change. Notice the difference between saying, I am anxious and there is anxiety. Just, oh, there is anxiety versus I am anxious. You know, like it's one is just very much a one-to-one identification with something, and the other is just noticing that this is something arising. Or saying I am sad versus, oh, there's sadness. When we say, again, I am, it's more of a fixed thing. And when you say there is blank, that can open space to kind of witness and observe what is happening within ourselves. And when you use this there is blank formula, sort of naturally inclines you to notice what else there is. Okay, there is anxiety, but there's wondering. There's the feeling of my feet on the floor. There's hearing the air conditioning. There's seeing the light. There's this whole panoply of things arising and passing away in every present moment. I am any of these things. They're all, I don't have time to go into this, but I promise you what the biggest lesson I've learned from meditating on reality is that it is actually nothing is a noun. Everything is a verb. It is flow, process, and relationship all the way down. And this kind of there is tunes you into that. So this one practice you can experiment with to make yourself just a little freer, just a little happier, shifting from I am to there is. Second, try reframing judgments into observations. On the one hand, there are times when it serves you to judge, to be a little bit judgy or even a lot judgy. On the other hand, shifting some judgments into observations, especially if you just notice you're going through life like judging things all the time, it can allow you to move through the world in a more peaceful, easeful way. I'll give you an example. Think about the difference between the judgment, "This coffee is terrible," and the observation, "This coffee is bitter." Either way, you don't have to keep drinking the coffee. That's not the takeaway here. But mindfully noticing and observing instead of judging can leave you with more inner peace. Or notice the difference between saying, "This song is stupid," or "This song is really loud and dissonant," or whatever is the characteristic of the song. Again, you don't have to keep listening or focusing on the song either way, but calling the song stupid, it plays into our human negativity bias. As you've heard me say before, you know, brain researchers say that our brains are like Velcro for negative experiences and Teflon for positive experiences. So when you're judging all the time, you're just playing into that Velcro effect. Whereas simply observing the song's characteristics, it's more neutral, it's less likely to get us hooked, therefore making, again, us incrementally happier than we may have been otherwise. Some of you will know the Buddhist teacher Pema Chodron, who's always worth reading. You know, one of her sayings is, "Don't bite the hook." Don't bite the hook. And observing instead of judging is a way to bite the hook less. But sometimes, you know, especially around our family or those close to us, you know, some of you have heard me say before, you know, our family can push our buttons because our family sewed on our buttons. So you will find that sometimes we do get hooked on something. And this third practice, in that case, can help you get more free. Ask yourself if whatever is preoccupying you, will it still matter in 5 minutes? Will it still matter in 5 days, 5 weeks? 5 months, 5 years, and kind of sitting with each of these things in turn. So a conflict, you know, with someone important in your life, at work, at home, wherever, it can feel so earth-shattering at the time. And sometimes it is, but this practice can give you perspective on how significant it really is or isn't. Imagine you have a heated phone conversation that results in someone angrily hanging up with you at 3 p.m. this afternoon. To do this practice, you're invited to briefly reflect on the perspectives of 5 different versions of your future self. And it can help to be really, really specific about this. So will this matter 5 minutes from now? Imagine that it is then 3:05 p.m. Probably so. It'll probably still matter at 3:05. Will this matter 5 days from now? And then think about it. Okay, by then it'll be Friday. Yeah, perhaps this will still bother me. Perhaps I will still be in conflict with this significant person. Will this matter 5 weeks from now? You know, it doesn't take very long, but like get out a calendar if you need to and notice, okay, now we're talking about February 11th. By then, this ordeal really might be in the rearview mirror. How about 5 months from now? It'd have to be pretty serious to be a problem by June. Will this matter in 2028? It might, you know, some dramas really do last that long, but that's pretty rare. You can go through this practice in a really specific, concrete way in just a minute or two, and it can really give you perspective on how seriously to take something and help you be freer and move on with your life in the meantime. Maybe it will still matter 5 years from now, but is worrying about it right now going to make any difference? You know, that's another piece of this. And again, it can leave you incrementally happier than you would have been otherwise. If you want the advanced version of this practice, actually, you don't have to do this all the time, but like experiment once or twice with this year. Make a note for yourself, like, you know, 5 days, like use a digital calendar and make a note, 5 days, 5 weeks, 5 months, even 5 years from now, and you'll be surprised. You'll be like, oh, wow, like, you know, 5 months, I had totally forgotten about that thing that I thought, you know, and write down, actually, 5 months from now, I predict that I will feel X way about it, and see if you really do feel X way, or if you've shifted into Y or Z, or whatever way that's really surprising to you. In most, not all cases, negative experiences end up mattering significantly less over time than we initially guess they will. Now, I wish I had time for us to explore more practices, but I want to begin shifting us toward fire communion in a way that will allow us to focus on the areas that do feel most significant to us in this season of our lives. And as I do so, I want to invite our liturgist, Irene, if she's going to begin lighting our candles on both sides, and you can invite a helper if you want to grab like one of these candles, or Sabrina, if you want to grab one of those candles, you can light some. So light all those votives and the center candle. As she does so, I invite you to close your eyes if you're comfortable doing so. Find a posture that's maybe a little more grounded, relaxed, and alert than you've been in. Take a deep breath in and out. And notice, as we're still on the edge of a new year, what do you feel called to move to with a greater level of commitment? You know, kind of maybe allowing yourself to be surprised about what comes to mind. What are you feeling led to let go of that's been a distraction or a detriment? To begin embodying a response to these questions, we'll be invited in a few minutes to participate in this annual UU ritual known as Fire Communion. So continuing to reflect on how this past year went for you, see if a person, place, or habit springs to mind that has consistently been a hindrance to your well-being. Is there something or someone that you feel called to let go of or say no to in the new year? What has been life-negating, leaving you regularly feeling drained of energy, alienated, or resentful? I invite you to mentally set an intention around whatever you want to let go of. And now begin to open your eyes. So continue to reflect on what you feel invited to let go of. And when you come forward in a few moments, Ursa's going to be here and Ash is going to be there. You're going to get one piece of flash paper and one votive candle. And what you're going to do with the flash paper is you're going to mentally set the intention of the person, place, habit that you want to let go of. And then you're going to either one of these votive candles or that center candle, light just the edge. And then through the magic of it. And now, don't do what I just did, because you're going to have neighbors around you. So if you will just kind of light it, and then let it go. And if you're a little more, if you're firephilic, you could just hold on to it. If you're firephobic, if you will kind of hold it over the sand when you, and just let it, and you want to kind of let it go there. Do not let it go toward your neighbor. If you do want to, so again, kind of just release it gently. If you want to play with fire, I'd invite you can do that after. We're going to have some left over. So I'll invite Ash and Ursa. When you're done, if y'all will put the plastic bags, just put them right here. So if you want to play with fire after the service, come forward. They'll be here. Still don't light each other on fire. But I will also say, and if there's some left over, you can take some with you. However, go ahead and use it in the next day or so. It's not that dangerous, but do not hold. This stuff will spontaneously combust if you just hold on to it. So like, if you're going to take it home, like make a note in your calendar 5 days from now, have I used the flash paper, or it will use you. Okay. Now, while setting an intention to burn a slip of paper, that doesn't mean that like you've let go, you know, magically, even though flash paper is magical. But I invite you to experience this ritual. It might be one step in what could be a long process of saying no to a part of your life, a person, a place, a habit that's really been life-negating for you. And so then next you're going to be invited, after you light that flash paper, to light a votive candle to signal a positive affirmation, something you want to say yes to. So what's a person, place, or habit that you want to affirm, say yes, or do more in the new year? What's regularly left you feeling energized or connected or grateful or more fully alive? And to do that, you can you can grab that one of those candles, and so Irene will be at that table. If you need the little candle, and we'll hold it upright to light your votive. But if you can, use the votives to light the votives. You can do that. We'll see what works. I'll also say, wait just a second, but as you do start to come forward, we'll start with the first rows and then we'll move toward the back, and go ahead and keep coming forward. We got to keep this process moving, and just kind of, you can wrap around the table and then go back when you're done. And the, I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to remind you of. I think that's the biggest pieces. Yes. Oh, thank you. When you finish the candle's lit, I would say kind of light it and then push it toward the center so we're not all reaching over fire. You can kind of and leave it there. Thank you. So as we begin to sing, you can turn in your teal hymnals to 1028. I'll invite the choir to go last so that y'all can help us lead us through the hymn, and then y'all can go at the end, and then Nick will keep playing until we're all done. And again, go ahead and start coming from the first to the back and wrap around the tables. Let's rise in body or spirit and sing together. Very briefly, I was just looking at my notes about a few more of these practices. I'll give them to you super fast if they might be of interest. And the first one I'll say for our folks on, I was so focused on the ritual here, I should say, we had like 122 devices logged on Zoom. So it's probably like 170 people watching from home, which is a lot. So I would just say for you at home, I apologize I didn't say this during Fire Communion, but I hope you too were lighting things on fire and burning things. So if not, I hope you will later in the day. And with that, so the first, very quick, I'm going to give you five more practices if they might be interested. The first is on Zoom. Do you know that there's an option if you kind of hover over your picture? There's an option to hide self view. And that's sort of a favor you can do for yourself on Zoom. It's kind of what we want to do in general is hide our self view. You're kind of getting under your ego, but you can actually, so you're not like fixated on yourself on Zoom and you can focus on other people. And that's the second practice. So the first is hide self view on Zoom. The second is, and Justice Jobs, Bob, was a great example that if you're really like struggling yourself, it is truly the case that helping other people can really get you kind of out of yourself, at least somewhat. It can really help. A third one is, again, with that kind of hiding self view, I'll leave you with this phrase. Many of you know it, but I think it's helpful to remind ourselves. Be very cautious of judging your insides by other people's outsides, right? Be very wary of judging your insides by what you perceive are other people's outsides, right? You don't really know what's going on or what other people are carrying. The fourth one is that what we pay attention to grows, right? And that's kind of like with that, are we just judging a bunch of stuff? Or are we more practicing observing? Like, what we pay attention to grows. Are you just rehearsing these stories of grievance over and over? Is that serving you anymore? It's not that it's not true. You're right to be aggrieved about that. But is it serving you to continue to pay attention to it? Is it, or is what you're paying, what else can you pay attention to? This may be one of your candle things instead of one of your burn the paper things. And finally, especially because I mentioned that previous book about moving, you know, for the second half of life, pay attention in your life to the difference between, do you know this term, real friends and deal friends? Deal friends are like work friends or transactional friends. They're people that like, so I see this a lot with colleagues who retire and they realize that like all these people, all of you who like, you know, like, call and text me and email me all the time, right? Ministers find that like when they retire, and this is true in other, that all of a sudden their inbox goes and their phone and they realize they had a bunch of deal friends and they didn't have a bunch of real friends. So who are those real friends that you're really investing in? This is the final thing I'll say. It's pretty well known that that principle from anthropology that tribes tend to break down around 150 and split, so that about 150 is the number of people you can know by name and missed when absent. But imagine three concentric circles. That's kind of your largest concentric circle. That's like your acquaintances. Shrink, keep moving the decimal point, so 150. 15 is kind of the next kind of concentric circle. Who are your 15? And that's kind of your closer friends. And then who are your five? You know, if you keep moving the, you know, so that, and that, so, you know, 150, 15, and then it's like, who are your five that are your really, really five to seven people that you really, really know well. So just pay attention to that. And are you just investing in your deal friends? Are you really building those deal friends? And how might you spend more time with those real friends in the new year? So in that spirit, as we continue to, and I love this, everybody rejoice. I also wanted to say, you know, this is the really positive version of Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, right? That's basically what that song is. Anyway. All right. So as we continue into the rest of this day and seek to rejoice and find the places that are joyful in our life, may you continue your journey in love. Care for one another. Care for this one earth. Do justice and make peace. And as you go, whatever taste or touch you've had in this time and place, whatever glimpse you've had into things you may be able to let go of incrementally more and affirm and become incrementally happier, that goes with you out into the world. We're different for having spent this time together. May you live boldly. May you live with thanksgiving.